Welcome, everybody. My name is Sherry Sellers, and I'm the host of Making the Change Talk. This is a podcast for people who are thinking about or on their journey towards a tobacco-free life. In this episode, we're going to explore and help you understand why tobacco is so addictive. And joining us today are two guests, Dr. Thomas Ely Oha. Did I say that correct? Am I close?
Pretty close. Pretty
say
close.
It for me. Say it
Ely
for me.
Ely Oha.
Ely Oha, okay. He's the clinical director for health initiatives at National Jewish Health, which includes the Quit Line. Thomas is also a licensed social worker with years of healthcare and research experience, known best for his expertise helping those who use tobacco. And we also have with us the fabulous Tani. She's a former smoker who picked up her first cigarette at 12 and has been tobacco-free for about 2 years now. Now, Tani, Thomas has a pretty long title, so shall we add something to yours like Queen of Quit?
That's awesome. I'll take that.
Okay. Thomas, let's start with the fact that it just blows my mind. Nicotine is more addictive than heroin. Why is it so addictive?
Well, you know, Sherry, our brains are wired to take in nicotine. We actually have receptors in our brain called nicotine receptors. They were actually named that way because of the guy who discovered them, and I can't remember his name, a French scientist. But what we actually discovered is that nicotine loves those receptors. You need those receptors to do day-to-day activities, be able to manage your impulses, be able to think and remember things. And what nicotine does is it actually takes advantage of that, and it fits really closely into those receptors and takes over them really quickly. When it does that, you still need those receptors. You still need to be able to, you know, get about your daily life by using those receptors in your brain. And if nicotine's in there, it actually builds more. Well, when you have more of those receptors, you can take in more nicotine. So usually what happens is people first take nicotine. They maybe feel sick a little bit. They maybe get a little bit nauseous. They don't feel great. Maybe their heart is racing. And that quickly goes away every time they use a little bit more. And they start to build up tolerance. And so they can take in more and more and more nicotine. And when they try to stop using nicotine, the brain says, I've got all these empty receptors that need to be filled. So please give me more nicotine. Well, what the brain is really doing is saying, I'm really cranky, I'm really irritable, I'm angry, I'm hungry, I'm stressed out, please give me nicotine. And so we go back and we get more nicotine and we put it back into our brains, and that's what starts that cycle of addiction. So it's the brain starts to adapt to the nicotine, and then when you don't have it, it starts to go through withdrawal. That's nicotine dependence. Your brain is physically becoming dependent on nicotine.
Tani, I know this sounds familiar to you. Tell us about the impact nicotine was having on you.
Oh, the impact was huge because I feel like I almost lost my life to it. I couldn't breathe and I couldn't quit smoking either. And it's like, even when it got, you know, bad, I was taking an inhaler and smoking cigarettes. And that's being sick and addicted.
Yeah. Tell me about, you have to share the coughing fits you would have at night. Let us feel what you were feeling.
Oh my gosh. The worst one, it was an actually 2 hour long coughing fit. And it was the worst coughing fit in my life. I could not catch my breath. I could not quit coughing. And I knew then and there, it's like, I felt like I was going to die. You know, I literally felt like I was going to die. And the sick thing about it is that I had quit smoking cigarettes after that coughing fit. But then a couple of years later, I started smoking again. Yeah. And then I went right back, like almost immediately, to where I was of being on the inhaler, not being able to breathe, not being able, you know, to function. And you know, I'd slept with the inhaler by my bed and a bag of cough drops. And it was so scary. It was so scary not being able to catch your breath.
Thomas, what's happening to our bodies? What's happening when she's describing this? I know you've heard these stories before. Why do we keep reaching for the cigarette?
Yeah, one of the things, Sherry, that Tani mentioned was that she started smoking when she was 12. And that's not an uncommon story, you know, the tobacco industry for a long time is known. If they can get young people to use their products, they'll be customers for life, regardless of how harmful they can be to their overall health. And there's some good reasons for that. One is, when you're a young person, your brain is still forming. It's still building its connections that make you into an adult. When your brain finally matures at about 25, 26 years old, it doesn't change as fast. And we all know that if you try to learn a new trick after you're in your mid-20s, it's much harder to learn a new language, to learn new math skills, to learn a musical instrument. Your brain just isn't as adaptable after about the age of 25 or 26. And when nicotine is in that process, if you add in nicotine while the brain is developing, the brain develops around needing nicotine. It actually builds and strengthens connections from one brain cell to the next that actually then can be reactivated at any time. And so Tani said something that I experienced as a former smoker as well, which is, you know, you have one and it's not great, but those pathways are still there in your brain, ready for another cigarette, ready for another dose of nicotine. And so when you reintroduce nicotine again at some point in the future, that dependence can come back in a flash. And so a lot of times people will find when they quit smoking, they can't have just one because it leads them right back to needing that nicotine again. And doing it, and the definition of nicotine dependence means that you are you're engaging in nicotine use despite the harms that it's causing to your health, to your social life, to your ability to work, to your ability to function. And that's addiction in and of itself. That is really the definition of it, is when you keep doing a behavior, even though you know it's harming other areas of life. So it's a really, really powerful addiction.
Tani, we have to share your story, that your addiction, your coughing were so terrifying. Your fiance, who I know is a really good guy, that he finally told you what?
He finally told me that he wouldn't marry me if I kept smoking, because he didn't want to watch me die. He wanted to watch me live. And that gave me a lot of strength. When you have a loved one, you know, looking at you saying, I can't watch you do this anymore. I mean, because I would be smoking while having horrific, you know, fits. And it really gave me inspiration and strength, and to realize, you know, that I was affecting him so harshly.
I was amazed when you told me recently that, and it's been 2 years, but Tani says that she dreams about cigarettes.
Yeah. That, you know, again, those probably a big part from what I'm hearing Tani's story is, you know, cigarettes have been a huge part of your life. So think about the idea of, you know, if somebody smokes, say, let's just use a pack a day as an example. So that's 20 cigarettes. Let's say they take on average 10 to 15 drags on that cigarette to smoke it. Now you're up to about 200 to, let's see if I could do math, maybe 250 times a day that you make this one action over and over, this lifting that cigarette to your mouth and back down. So you're doing that all day. You only have, maybe you're awake, I don't know, 16 to 18 hours in a day. You're just doing that behavior over and over and over and over, but you're still living your life at the same time, right? And so you're pairing all of that nicotine use and that action of lifting your finger to your mouth, and it becomes part of everything you do. So when you try to get rid of it, you've got all of these memories about having smoked. You have associations between, you know, when you walk out the front door, lighting a cigarette, getting into your car, lighting a cigarette, being around family or friends and having a cigarette. You just have so many memories that are completely tied to smoking that even after you remove the smoking, your brain still has all of those memories. You're still remembering them over and over and over. And especially when people first quit, a lot of times those memories can trigger them to want to have a cigarette. So it's really important to have coping strategies in place so that when you do get those cravings or those triggers that are associated with certain events or certain emotions, that you have something in place that can help you get through them.
You mentioned that you were a smoker, so you speak from experience. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey?
Yeah, like Tani, I was a 12-year-old. My older brother was a smoker. I got a cigarette from his pack, and a friend and I ran out behind the proverbial barn to smoke that cigarette. And the first one for me was not disgusting. It was great. And I loved the feeling of it. And I was hooked right from there. And I started by smoking menthols like many young people do. You know, the older kids in school used to make fun of us for asking them to buy menthols. And so they slowly transitioned us because they would always take a few out of the pack when they'd buy them. And they didn't like smoking the menthols anymore. So that's how they got me off of menthols, but into smoking other forms of tobacco. For me, I always say that one of the hardest things I ever did was quit smoking. That was up until I did my PhD. So now I say that it's as hard as doing a PhD. It's like doing a PhD in yourself and just the amount of mental, emotional energy and support it takes from other people to really get you through and to really push you over the hill in terms of being able to stay quit for good. It's now been about 15 years in. So I haven't had a cigarette in 15 years, but I still know there are still times when it smells really good, you know, fresh rain, a crisp, cool morning, the smell of cigarette smoke suddenly smells good again for an instant. And I always still have to remind myself, don't do it. You don't want to go back down that pathway again.
Tani, what is it for you? Do you still have moments?
You know, they come out when I'm awake. I don't crave them. And they actually smell really nasty to me. And when I'm awake, the thought of having a cigarette, I don't even want to, because I know what it did to my health. And I know that if I were to have one due to my past experience, that I'd be hooked just like that again. You know, so I know that I don't have the option of even letting myself have one if I want to have my life and be able to breathe. when I dream of them, it's really weird, because it's always during a frustrating time, you know, when I'm frustrating with something. And it's most of the time in my dream, I get even more frustrated because I can't find that cigarette and I'm looking everywhere for it and I can't find it. But then when I wake up and I realize that it was a dream and that I did not smoke, I become so proud of myself. And it just, in a way, it does give me the strength to not smoke, because I mean, I don't want to ever have to deal with the withdrawals that I went through and the emotions and everything. I do have to agree, it was absolutely one of the hardest things that I ever had to do. It was a tough journey. And it's still a journey, but it's one that I want to keep on going. I want to walk this path that I'm on.
Oh, we love your strength. It's amazing to hear you talk like this. There are some really scary facts about smoking. Everywhere you turn and you hear them from your family, you know, that according to the CDC, more than 30 million Americans currently smoke. 16 million are living right now with a disease caused by smoking. And here's one that hurts, I think, every parent every day. About 1,600 teens and youth try their first cigarette. But Thomas, let's lean into the hope. Let's lean into something encouraging. What's the good news about addiction?
Well, you can change. And in fact, as sobering as those stats are about the number of people who currently smoke, there are actually more people who have stopped smoking than currently smoke today. There are more people who have already gone down that quit journey and successfully quit smoking, which means everybody can do it. It takes everybody, everybody's quit journey is a little bit different. Everybody has a slightly different experience, but there are things that work. You know, we've got really good quit medications like using nicotine patches or the gum and lozenges. There are other medications that are available with a prescription. We know that things like getting connected to a counselor can really increase your chances of quitting for good. And so when people use those supports, when they use the counseling, when they use things like the quit line, when they use the quit medications, their chances of quitting successfully go up a really big amount. So, you know, the most of the data suggests that maybe 6 or 7% of people can quit when they try with nothing, which is pretty low odds. When you combine that with things like quit line coaching or with the quit medications, your chances of quitting get closer to 1 in 2, 1 in 3. And so if you put those supports in place, addiction becomes a thing of the past.
Tani, what role did quit line play in your journey?
Quit line saved my life. I mean, literally saved my life. Number one, they you know, gave me the medication. I used patches. They followed up with me with counseling, but they weren't intrusive. They were supportive. And that was the greatest part, was the support that I got for them along with the medicine. It gave me that extra strength, you know, to just get up over that hill. And it was really a day by day, hour by hour battle, you know, but having that extra help, having the patches, having the support, I could not thank the Quitline enough for everything that they gave me back my life. I can breathe again. I still have COPD because I quit smoking too late, but I can breathe again. I can climb that mountain. I mean, my life has changed for the better, and it's because I had the help of the Quitline.
What do you want to say, Tani, to people who are listening right now, who are in the midst of their journey? What do you want to tell them?
I want to tell you, take it hour by hour, day by day. Don't beat yourself up. If you fall, pick yourself back up and get back on the road. You know, I want to say, don't ever give up, and that you can do it. And the rewards that you got will make it so much worth it. You're going to notice your skin change. You're going to notice your breathing change. Everything, your outlook on life, everything gets better. It really does, especially when you're not hooked to that chain. And all the money you can save because you're not spending all that money on cigarettes. It's a new life. And everybody out there, you can do it. Reach down inside yourself, find that strength. Don't be afraid to ask for help and be real about your feelings, and you can do it.
Thomas, come on now. How does that make you feel when you hear her talk like that about Quitline?
I love it. I mean, because it's something that's a program that I really believe in. I've been, I have the pleasure of being a leader in the Quitline community, and for in particular for our program, and working in multiple states to do it. But I believe in it so strongly. And that's the reason I do this work, is because I know that we get to be there and be able to offer free help to people who are looking to get rid of the influence of all of these different types of tobacco from their life. Being able to offer people support when they've got an industry on their back that is trying to get them to spend more and more money on an addictive product. And we can say, look, we've got support for you. We'll help you do it. We know that we can help you do it. You may not, like, it may take you a few times to succeed, but we'll be there each time. We'll continue helping you until you've completely gotten rid of it from your life for good. You know, when I quit, it took me a year of solid quitting. I back and forth. I would throw away a pack of cigarettes. I'd go and buy another one. I would use the nicotine patches. I wouldn't buy more. And then I'd go back to smoking. I would quit for a week and then I would return. And it just, you know, it's important for people to understand that it's something that comes back a few times until you've learned all your lessons that you needed to learn in order to do it for good. And you can, and you will.
Thomas, if we can give one message today, if we can learn one thing, because we're just about out of time, what is that message you want everyone to hear?
You can do it. There's many of us who have done it. You can do it too.
I love it. Tani, we can't say thank you enough. You are absolutely amazing. And Thomas, the knowledge you share will make a difference today. I can just feel it. So I want to thank you guys. And to those of you who are listening in, thank you as well. We hope that you'll listen to our next conversation on Making the Change Talk. Most importantly, remember that the Quitline is here for you 24/7. When you're ready to make the change, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or click on the Enroll Now link on the podcast homepage. Thank you to everybody.